Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 15, delivered on October 9, 2018. The title of this lecture is Review for the Midterm Exam.
Today, review for the midterm exam. Now, as I told you, I'm going to tell you a few things I want you to know. And then it's up to you to ask me questions. If you don't want to, you can all go home. But if you ask me questions, oh, is this going to be on the exam? And it's not, I'll tell you. No, I'm not going to ask that. In the past, I would give a list of questions, and all of my questions would come from that list. And I've stopped doing that because that just turned into getting group answers. And I don't give out grades for groups, and I don't think we should be giving out college degrees to groups for group thinking. It's gotten too far out of hand here. Now, one thing I will caution you, don't go to the internet for answers. You will lose all the points, first of all, because you won't cite, and second of all, because the internet is going to lie to you. I had one, I said, what is the yield curve? And I told them I was going to ask this question, so they all went and did this. They just typed into Google, watch this. Google, and I said, this one might be on the exam, yield curve. So they typed in yield curve. This was the one that was showed up, Investopedia. They lost all the points. Virtually everyone wrote that answer down, and it was wrong. It's not the right answer. First of all, it was not cited. They didn't give me a citation. And second of all, that's not what I want. I want you to talk about yield curves of treasury securities from short to long maturities and all of that. That just gave you a quickie, and you saw many of them just even drew me the graph. Now, I've put up a rubric online. It should be up right now. It shows you how the points are distributed on my exams. There are two categories of questions. Okay, there are two questions in each category. You answer one of the questions in each category. So in other words, you're answering two questions. One from category one, one from category two. As a matter of fact, actually, maybe I ought to just put the exam up on the overhead for you. You're still not quite with me this morning, are you guys? Okay. Now, the first category has to do with cash flow. It is a broad category, and then I'll have two questions. You answer one of them. Don't answer both questions. I will take off half the points if you on you for the first one that you do answer one of them, and you won't get any credit for the other one, and you'll lose half the points on the one that you did answer. Answer one question in each category, not two. One question. Now, the other thing is each of your answers should be one or two sentences. Do not give me 3, 4, 5. Don't write me an essay. You're going to be in a business world where you have a boss who says, what's the answer to this? He doesn't want your term paper, your dissertation, your master's thesis. She wants a quick, sharp answer. You show me you know what you're doing. I do have a bullshit stamp, by the way, and I just got it re-inked. I kid you not. There are people who actually aim to get that stamp so they can, yeah, I got a bullshit stamp. No, don't be proud of it. It's not a mark of confidence. Okay. Two sentences. Grammatically complete. Don't abbreviate. Don't use parentheses. Don't use little ampersands and things like that and little plusy signs for ands. Write in complete English sentences. This is the kind of stuff that I get bitched at by business people out there who say, why don't you teach them how to write? And I just go back and I say, look, bitch, it's not my job. Well, apparently it is. Because the English department falls down on you. So I want you to write for me like business professional. Not like, you are. I mean, you're kind of pre-professional, but most of you are going to be out there, God help us, within a year or two. Write like a professional for me. Give me sharp, clear answers. Don't write equations. An equation isn't an answer. An equation is like a graph. And at best, it's an illustration, but at worst, it's just a crutch for people, even professors, who don't know how to explain things in words. Don't write equations for me. Don't show me the idea with a graph. Write sentences. Stay frosty. If you have your major act together, you could probably get this done in about 20 minutes and then read through it. This isn't texting where you slap out an answer and then hit the send button. You make misspellings, you make comma splices, you do things like that. You know, you're going to lose points hard on me. 10 of the 50 points on each question is just on your ability to communicate in straight up English to me. Then 40 points is on content. And like I said, there's a rubric that I've got up online right now. It gives you a step-by-step mechanics of the writing, the content of the writing, how many points you get for doing this, this, and this. I did notice there's a little gap in one of them, one of the points systems. I might have to correct that tonight, but overall it's complete. Now, as I said, the two categories are, one, cash flow, and two, more or less investment. You need to know the difference on the first category. You need to know the difference between what an accountant says, net income, and what we in finance care about, free cash flow. You need to know the difference, the mechanics of the difference. A little warning for you. Give your answers very sharply. Don't ever start an answer with I think or I feel or I believe. We don't care about your feelings and beliefs. Just say the difference between net income and free cash flow is. And don't give me a list. Give me a sentence. And digging a little deeper into that idea of cash, free cash flow, and net income, what is in accounting that we have to get rid of to do financial analysis? What in accounting do we need to get rid of to do financial analysis? And on the other side, what in is missing in accounting that's really important to us in finance? And I'll even give you an idea of that. Think about hidden costs. Think about those costs that accountants cannot, are not allowed to recognize. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. What is missing in accounting that we actually need to know about to formulate our answer, our understandings of companies? Okay, now, I spent time showing you financial statements, and I talked about the ratios. You need to know why we want to look at the ratios and why we need to think before we just react to what a ratio is. So, for example, what is important about liquidity and liquidity ratios? Is it true that liquidity is always better? Is it true that liquidity is always not as good? More liquidity? Show me that you understand that there's not an absolute, that there is, okay, this company's liquidity is too high, or I'm worried about this company's liquidity, or this company's liquidity is awfully low. I worry about that. Remember Netflix. I mean, it's got liquidity from hell. By the way, did you see that Netflix actually just used some of that money to buy a studio? It was one that was off my radar, but it's sure enough, they're aiming that money at studios. It was some studio, and actually they paid quite a bit of money for it, a studio that's done some really good indie work out of Albuquerque. But, yeah, so why am I concerned when there's too much liquidity? Why am I concerned when there's not enough liquidity? Return on assets. Remember I talked about it. Think about return on assets as a mathematical object. Net income over total assets. Why would I be bothered if return on assets just keeps going up and up and up? Oh, that's great. ROA is going up. That's wonderful. No, it's not. Not always. Yes, it's good that it goes up, but if it keeps going up, I need to have a look at that denominator and see what's going on relative to the numerator. Remember I told you about the oil refineries. Also, of course, there's some of the other financial statement information like total stockholders' equity. Remember how I bitched about that quite a bit? Remember, stockholders' equity, the accountants say it's this, the market says it's that. Who are you going to believe? And why should you believe me, other than the fact that I give you your grade, and not the accountants, other than the fact that they are accountants? I think I'm going to just put the exam up on the overhead. No. Okay, here's something that's really important. And I'm just going to say this is a broad category. Understand it. Go to your notes. Peel your notes apart on this. Priority of claim on cash flows. Priority of claim on cash flow. Who gets first? Who gets last? How does the last group get its claim satisfied? Again, who gets first dibs? Who gets last dibs? How is it distributed to those people who get the last dibs? How is it distributed to the people who have the first dibs? What does this have to do with the risk of the investment? We've got different kinds of investors in a company. How does the priority of claim relate lockstep to the risk those investors in those different categories face? And what does that mean about the return on it they expect? I'm going to send you into a demon house. It's really got demons in it. I mean, they're the kind that are not pleasant. They eat your soul, but even worse, they fix you Spam sandwiches and make you eat them for all eternity. Is that your house? The house of the damned. My house. You are going to go into a fun house at Now, which one is going to be riskier, his or yours? Yeah, probably his. So who's going to want to be paid more? You, for giving up your soul for all eternity and eating Spam sandwiches? Or you, who are going to go through, oh, God, that was scary. I'm going out. Now, mind you, some of those houses are really scary. Have you seen those photographs from that house, that horror house in New York, where people go in and they photograph them? This one guy, he picked up his girlfriend and held her up in front of the horror thing he was looking at. That was not good, man. Okay, try to stay focused, okay? Return, risk, priority of claim. Return, risk, priority of claim. Understand it. Show me that you know it. Show me that you can do it in two sentences. Okay, let me talk about investments. Something that's a theme that you've probably noticed, at least on an unconscious level, is the importance I place upon understanding risks and investments and responsibility for doing investments right. For example, portfolio diversification. Why do I insist? Why do I say you are a stupid investor if you don't diversify your portfolio? Why do I condemn these morons on television and in these newspaper articles? You should buy this stock. Why do I say that's a stupid ass thing to do? You are missing the whole point of responsibility. Now, responsibility also, appropriateness. When I say appropriateness of investment, I'm not trying to actually put you on the spot. Well, yeah, I am. But it's a little hard until I talk more about it. Ma'am, what do you think I mean by appropriateness? I'm a financial advisor. Why is appropriateness a word that I need to have tattooed on my left shoulder? Appropriateness. Why? It's okay if you're struggling with this. I've been trying to drill it down more and more as I've come forward. You got anything for me? Go. Well, okay. Yeah, there's a big no-no. Do not cheat. Do not swindle. What I'm focusing on, ma'am, do you have anything for me? Okay, you're, what, about 22? Damn. Oh, no wonder I used to get in so much trouble. Moving forward, okay. Now, I want you to imagine that you are a 70-year-old person. Why am I going to put you as the 19-year-old into a riskier portfolio than I'm going to put the 70-year-old? Why? Any idea? Go ahead. Yes, you are capable of bearing risk more. Old people, you don't do this to them. You have a fiduciary duty not to play with people's money unless first they say yes, and even if they say yes, you don't until you understand the investor. You might come to me and you're 60 years old and say, I feel like I am 20. Bro, you don't look like it. You're 60. Stop lying to yourself. You're old. Okay, you know what really pisses me off? That new term, older men. Oh, God. Do not ever. Oh, anyway. Okay, when you're 60 years old, you might think, yeah, and you might tell me, oh, I'm a wild and crazy guy. I want you to throw it all to the wind. All my money, I want you to put it into beta 2.5 stocks. And I will simply call the home where they keep you that you escaped from and have them come and put you back where you belong with those nice meds and those rerun episodes of Mayberry RFD. Okay? It has to do with, first of all, what the person wants, but also what the person is capable of handling and what the consequences are. Now, you might not like my advice to you, but that's what it's sort of like being a parent or being a professor. I'm an asshole, okay? A lot of people say that about me, but at the same time, I know what I'm doing, and as a financial professional, you have to know that there are times when no means the right thing to do for an investor. That's appropriateness. And also looking at people's lives, so many people people even of the same age might not have the same circumstances. Appropriateness of investment. It's going to be more difficult for you if you don't understand the concept to write two sentences that can capture. So think about this part of what I've talked about. Age is obviously there. Marital status. Children. And there are other factors you can think of that would drive appropriateness of investment strategy. Obviously, you need to know the relationship between risk and expected return. And why I keep fussing about, don't say return, say expected return. The distinction sounds kind of trivial, but it carries a huge amount of weight behind it. Let me try this. Madam, can you capture for me in some way why I fuss about expected return, not return? Well, your return is going to be, why is that a bad thing to say? Yes. You don't know what the future holds. You might have an idea that you're going to live to tomorrow. You have an idea that you're going to make it to next year. You have an idea that the stock market should keep going up because, hell, it's been going up since you guys were in junior high. So it should keep the return. That's an expectation, you see. It's not an actuality. The future has no return. It has expected return. You're taking this college degree. You, madam, you are here at ISU. You are getting your degree. Why are you getting a college degree here? Is it because you love college, working like a dog at a job or two, studying your head off, listening to a foul-mouthed professor who spits when he talks? Or is there some other reason you're here? Why?
To get a job.
Oh, a job. I see. You see, almost none of you are here because this is a wonderful place and you love your self-education and it's going to make you a better person and it's going to make you a fabulous family man. It's going to make you fertile of loin. It's not, those are not the issues. It's because you want a higher paying job. I can't guarantee that. All I can do is feed your expectation that that's what's going to happen. That's what it's all about, keeping focused on the reality of what is behind what people say. Okay, now, I'll throw in efficient markets, and you should know something about flight to quality. Be able to define it. Don't use my informal definitions. Use my formal. Always make sure that you're not using something I said informally. From stocks to bonds, from bonds to gold, from gold to bullets. Use the formal definitions if I've given you something that's formal. So if I ask you about liquidity, don't talk about, what was the one I did? Pies and moose, apple pies and moose. That is not how you define liquidity in a midterm. Also, just know about interest rates. What I've been showing you, why it is great concern when I see interest rates going up. What am I bitching about? Why is that a problem for you out there in the audience? And you should also make sure you know what the current situation is with the stock market, with the bond market, with the yield curve. Why am I talking about that? What's going on? Show me that you've been in my class, you've been listening, you're engaged, you're looking up there, not at a computer, hiding it between your legs or something, nonsense like that, that you are actually seeing the dynamics of the yield curve. Why that is of concern, you know, I'll have a job. You might not. That's why I'm very concerned about what's going on. Why am I concerned? What's going on? What have I been showing you has been happening? And what am I watching for? And why is that something that is scary? Now it's your turn. Go ahead. Make my day. Yes.
Is your question specifically on yield curves?
No. Ooh. Very good. See what I did for it? Did you see what happened there? He asked me a specific question. Is there going to be a question on yield curves? I said no. Yes.
Should we know how to apply any of the equations?
No. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up.
I can beat the hell out of you with those things on Cengage, MindTap. There are people who write to me in the middle of the night calling me bad names. You know, are you out of your mind? Look, yeah, you've got to have the technical skill sets. But then again, robots are going to have those. Artificial intelligence is going to beat your asses when it comes to doing equations. And I'm saying this from the perspective of someone who is PhD level mathematics. You wouldn't even recognize the math that I do. But it doesn't do a damn bit of good when you go out there and you can't translate that math into plain logic and apply it. So that's a good thing here. I don't want to see equations. I don't want you to do math on my written exams. Because at the end of the day, if you go into a board meeting and they ask you a question and you write a mathematical equation up on the whiteboard for them, they're going to just sit back and they're going to say, well, that's very nice. Now, why don't you go down to the mailroom because that's where your next job is. It's the same thing that happens when these young pups come in, junior executives, to a meeting. It's their first chance to do a meeting, and they run a video. Or they run a PowerPoint with little stupid animations. That is not showing content understanding. Yeah, so no numbers. Okay, you heard me bitch about that enough. Go.
Are we going to have to break down the summary of astronomy?
Oh, you mean one of those? Not this time. I did that last year where you saw a screen and I wanted you to break down what you saw on the screen. I'm not going to do that this time. No. Yeah, go. No, I forgot. I was looking back over the exam and I didn't do anything on Kant versus John Stuart Mill, utilitarianism, agency. I didn't do it. So no, it's not going to be on there. My bad. I'll catch you next time. What else? Anyone else got anything for me? By the way, go ahead. Every one of them. I mean, I was sliding in things all through. I mean, there were some, I listened to my own lectures, I think, God, I'm an animal. Why am I not on stage? Yeah, listen to the lectures. I mean, there are some parts where, I mean, with the flash, let the whole thing load. And then you can jump. Over certain parts where it gets a little weird in the classroom, you can just jump over those parts and go on to something that's important again. But yeah, probably Apple iTunes has got my last five that are active right now. So if you need to go back further than that, you'll go to my website, isu-prof.com, and just sit there. Yes, I can actually see you when you're on my site. And I can just think, they like me. Oh, they're here with me. It's like having my family. My cats, I explain, well, that IP address is, and oh, he's brilliant. His buzz cut's a little weird, but, you know, I do that. I actually can see your IP address. Well, I listened to all of your lectures. No, you didn't. Your IP address isn't showing up anywhere. Like I said, though, what really weirds me out is these people from other countries who listen to my lectures over and over. I've got some people who've been listening to my lectures for 5 years, 7 years. Oh, they are not good people. Go.
Will there be a question as specific as what is the difference between net income and free cash flow?
There could be something that pushes at that. He asked, would there be a question where you would have to get detailed about what is actually the difference between net income and free cash flow? I could get you to that level where you're saying, well, free cash flow has this, which is not in net income. Free cash flow does not have depreciation, which, oh, I just named one for him. Okay, yeah. Just give me that you understand the details of it. Because in this way, you show me that you are going to understand that everyone talks about accounting numbers. It's everything. But by the time you get out of my class, you know that it actually isn't everything. And in fact, we have to do a lot more digging to get the real answers. This restaurant chain, what I don't want to mention it by name, but it's Culver's, and we have I can't get over it. Those burgers were so good, but we'll look at these restaurant chains, and some of them look very profitable, but then you realize that there is all of this damage sitting there, hidden in the financials. Like, for example, right now, we know that Papa John's took a major hit because the founder turned out to be a real asshole of a human. And that sometimes causes more damage these days. I mean, back in the past, you had people run companies who were absolute human demons, like Steve Jobs. They got by with everything they did. Anymore, they can't. So Papa John's took a bad hit. Interestingly enough, now come the rumors that it has been hit so hard in terms of its stock price, in terms of its reputation, that it has become vulnerable to a takeover by a very well-known takeover artist group. And of course, if those rumors persist, what will that do to the stock price of Papa John's? Push it up, right? Bid war, hostile takeover, actually kind of a white knight, but that could tease a black knight to come in and grab. Okay, other questions? Go. Oh, don't do preferred stock versus common stock. Just do equity and debt, okay? I'll give you that one. Everyone wrote that down, yeah. Go. You're pushing it there, Chief. What is a debt holder? I've had people on an exam. This will lose you points. The debt holders and the bond holders, well, you lose 10 points right there because you don't know that those are the same animal. Debt holders are, there are debt holders who are not bond holders, but there are no bond holders that are not debt holders. Did you just get that?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure. Because I didn't. I just noticed this T-shirt. You never really go to bed in college. Some naps are just longer than others. Yeah, unless you're taking Addy, then their naps are all short. Don't do that, man. Coming in here bouncing off the wall. Ping, pong. Yeah. What do you mean?
Like the Dutch market.
Oh, the auctions. Oh, you mean
yeah.
Dutch auction, English? No, I will not ask about that. I will not ask about the auction markets. Yeah. Oh, there's got to be something on there that shows that you understand the relationship between risk and expected return. There's got to be something. It would be in the context of a larger answer, but you would have to show me that you understand that relationship. Lock solid if you want to get all the points on the on a question that would relate to it. Go.
It would also need to know kind of the relationship between interest rates and inflation.
No. I won't hit you. Now, that's one thing that I will not do on this exam is I will not... because I'm not finished with that yet. I've got to do more on the risk structure of interest rates, you know, the default premium, liquidity premium, maturity premium, and then the real rate plus the expected inflation premium. I will not do that on this exam. I will not. It's just too detailed, and there's too much to do. And also, it was getting kind of close to the exam, and I like to have you have things that I've been building with you so that you have them more deeply embedded on an exam like this. Yeah. No, I won't ask about the Fed on this exam. Not directly. So you don't need to know the three tools of monetary policy and what are the three duties of the Fed. Won't ask you that. Won't ask you that on this exam. Yeah. I wish there were. Like I said, that's the agency and I did ethics, and I did not get to that. I forgot to ask you a question. I was going to on this exam, but it's too late. I've already sent them to the printer, so no, there's not. which I regret because that's such an important concept and no one else here is teaching. One of the most fundamental concepts in all of ethics in business. But there you go. Anything, go. Oh, no, because I can't remember them off the top of my head. Why the hell would I expect you? No, I'm not going to ask you the different types. What are the financial statements? I mean, look, I'm looking for more fundamental things. Trivial things like lists. Yeah, to some extent. But, I mean, there's a point where that just, all I'm asking you to do is regurgitate memory instead of showing me that you can put things together. So that's a good question. I do not ask a lot of that. I might ask you for something along the lines, show me the things that are in a free cash flow that are not in a net income, but not just one list after another after another. Like I said, there could be some listing, but write a list in a sentence. Don't put a bullet, don't do bullets on this for me. Yeah. Oh, no, you don't. Talk to me about that. Tell me one thing. What does free cash flow have that net income doesn't have? You got anything? Do you remember my discussion of what happened this year with a purchase I made in my company? A $4,500 purchase? Can I put that in my income statement? Expense $4,500. Can I? Huh? Oh, meals and entertainment. So, no, I can't. You see, capital expenditures, you're not allowed to put in your income statement. But that was $4,500 right out of my pocket. Ditto for all the artwork that I've had framed and hasn't sold. That is not in my net income. I can't expense that stuff. But it sure as heck whacked my free cash flow. This year, I'm projecting it now. I'm hoping maybe I'll have a decent purchase here. I'll probably be profitable to the tune of it's been a difficult year, about $3,000. My free cash flow is going to be close to negative $10,000. So on paper, I look like I am just doing great. Yeah, you're a great artist. Yeah, well, I'm going to die starving like Van Gogh did. Yeah, and I'm not going to cut off my damn ear because I like my ears. He was weird. Those are the kinds of things. Now, remember, I actually wrote it right there on the board, and then I wrote each one down. I said, this is actually net income. And then after that, I said, these are the things that we have to fix on it right there. What else? Anyone else got anything for me? Actually, that was a good talk. You asked some hard questions. Now, one last thing. Tomorrow evening, maybe 6, 7 o'clock, I am going to have a document open that will give you some points that I've talked about today. Okay? It'll be a short thing, about a page. But it'll cover these again just to lock your focus as you begin to study for the exam. Okay, and also look at the rubric. Know what my expectations are. I am absolutely clear. When you come in here, stay frosty, keep your head down, keep your fangs out, and get the job done. It shouldn't take you more than 20, 30 minutes to do it excellently. That's all I have for you. Go home.